This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, and we are here. Yes, we will have some fun, but we are here to honor the fallen today because it is Memorial Day. And as we always have done, and Lord willing, we'll always do on the Jesse Kelly Show, we do a show today. We do a show that is much different than the normal Jesse Kelly Show. If you tuned in today to hear anything political at all, you might want to just turn it off now because there won't be any of that. There will be a ton of honoring the fallen. There will be a ton of history. I will read names of the fallen you have emailed in. We will go over Distinguished Service Cross stories and Navy Cross stories and Legion of Merits. And we will talk about legends who gave their life for this country. There will not be politics. There won't be any soundboard fart sounds either. We are going to just honor the fallen on this Memorial Day. Couple disclaimers before we get going. Not disclaimers, couple FYIs, I guess I should say. Veterans, today can be a very difficult day for you if you lost a brother or sister in arms. If you are struggling today, reach out. There are all kinds of phone lines you can call. If you want to know the veteran specific line, if you're struggling today, dial 988 and press 1. Reach out. You are not alone. You are never alone. If you are down and out today, reach out. Okay? That is one. Two, remember, just a little reminder to everybody, I hope you have enjoyed your day. I hope you're enjoying your day. That is good. That is what the people who gave their lives to this country, that's what they would want. As long as you take a moment to honor them, they would want you to do that. But just a heads up, again, today is not Veterans Day. It's not First Responders Day, Police and Firemen Day, and All Those Who Serve Day. This is a day to honor the fallen and honor the families they left behind. Now, before we get into the Distinguished Service Cross stuff, the different citations and things like that and the history stuff around it we're going to read, I'm actually going to do a World War II and then a Korea and then a Vietnam. Let's get to a couple of the names you emailed in just because there's some history around some of this stuff. Matt Spangenberg, Colonel John Luther, Aaron Bank, founder of the Green Berets, Albert Duckett. These are names people have emailed into the show, people they want honored. This is World War II KIAs, these next ones. Tanker John Prizwara said he died at the Battle of the Bulge. Staff Sergeant Howard Harlan, he survived Bataan and died on a prisoner ship. Actually, let's pause right there. Let's do a little bit of history on that before I get into some other stuff and some other citation histories there. The prison ships. I read a book runtime, great book, called The Forgotten Highlander. Highly recommend it if it's your thing. It takes a little while to get going, I'll be honest with you. And because the guy is, I believe, Scottish, it sounds a little different. Some of the language used is a little different and older, but it's a book about a guy who was serving, obviously, with the British and was taken captive in World War II. And he was taken captive by the Japanese, and I'll go over the Bataan stuff here in just a moment. We'll do a little history on that. I hadn't intended to do that, but I figured we might as well do that today. But anyway, setting the Bataan stuff aside, we'll come back to this. This guy was captured by the Japanese, and in the course of his capture, he was put on a train when it was over 100 degrees out, and they stuffed so many guys in these trains, they would just die of suffocation inside of the train. They're all sick, very, very, very sick with disease and trying to do this as gently as possible. I mean, coming out the other end sick, you can't control it kind of sick. Now picture all the men in a sweaty train car being sick like that. They're not pulling over for you to use the bathroom. Just really, really horrible. Okay, so he gets put on this train car. He gets sent to various prison camps for various reasons. Remember, the Japanese, they were horrible to prisoners of war, all of them. And for the most part, the ones they didn't just flat out kill, they just used them all as slave labor. They wanted new slave labor. Well, one of the things you'll read about if you ever dig into World War II and kind of the Pacific area is this railway they were building. They were trying to build a new railway. Why? Well, they wanted to get supplies to and fro. That's what they were trying to do. They were having a hard time getting supplies to and fro, especially when you get over into that India jungle area. So in the Burma area, they'd created something called the Railway of Death or the Death Railway. Yeah, I know it sounds intense and it was horrible. The Japanese would have these slave labor units and they would make you get up. And there was no heavy equipment for these guys. The Japanese would have you sit there. Even if you were so disease-ridden you could hardly walk, they'd haul you out to the train where everyone else was digging, and they'd throw big rocks beside you and make you sit there and sledgehammer the rocks down and break the rocks down even though you couldn't stand. It's unbelievable how many people died. Okay, so this Forgotten Highlander guy, he did the train thing, riding on the train. Then he built this railway. So he's been through all these living hells. He's been tortured so many times. But the thing he said was the worst thing was the hell ships. They were called hell ships. They were the Japanese prison ships. And they honestly, it seems for me, I don't do that well with claustrophobia. I don't freak, but I don't do that well with it. This sounds like I would rather just die. I would rather you kill me. They would take ships. They would not put markings on them showing that there were prisoners on board. Therefore, our Navy and our planes would routinely sink our own ships with our own guys in them. Anyway, they would have this gigantic metal hold in the bottom of the ship. And remember, no air conditioning here. We're talking the South Pacific. It's roasting. They would stuff all the men down inside and then close the hatch so it's 120, 125 degrees. Everyone's disease-ridden. It's so cramped you can't even sit down. Guys are starting to die, dying of disease, a combination of disease and heat stroke. Guys are routinely losing their minds because picture that environment. Okay, you're mashed in there. You're hot. You're sick. Everyone's sick. Everyone's losing control of themselves. Men would routinely lose their minds. Men had to kill their friends. Picture this. Your friend loses his mind and starts trying to hurt everyone in this hold. You and your other friends have to kill your friend with your bare hands to stop your friend from killing other people. How does one ever get over something like that? Anyway, so these hell ships, that's what it was like in a hell ship. This Forgotten Highlander guy said the hell ship was worse than everything else. Everything. The train, the building, the railway, worse than everything. Which brings me back to this Staff Sergeant Howard Harlan, survived Bataan and died on a prisoner ship. Some of the most heartbreaking stories I've read and guys that I really want to honor today are Americans who died on these hell ships, because so often they would die. And I don't know if this is wrong of me, but we all kind of assign levels of importance or levels of horror or levels of difficulty in our own way, in our own mind. But in my mind, I think it's so uniquely horrible to have lived through, survived a million terrible things during the war, only to die on a hell ship. And oftentimes, like I mentioned, oftentimes, I don't know this guy's exact circumstance, oftentimes you died at American hands or British hands. You survive everything. This guy survived Bataan, which we'll go over here in just a moment. You survive everything, and then an American submarine sees a Japanese ship. It'll look like a merchant vessel of some kind or a naval vessel, and you fire a torpedo into its side. You're the American submarine, and you think you did good. And you find out later, and this happened to guys, they would find out later on, yeah, remember that ship we sunk last week? Yeah, there were 500 American POWs on that ship, and they're all gone now. Think of that level of guilt. Even though it's not your fault, you have no way of knowing. Think what that's like. So these guys to survive all this hell and then end up on a prisoner ship and die on a prisoner ship like Howard Harlan, I think that's something awesome. So we'll cover some baton stuff, read some more names, and then we have some World War II in Europe stuff. There's I don't know if it's a good story, a heavy story, but a story about some of our fallen. And yeah, that's going to be the show today on the Jesse Kelly Show. All right. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Memorial Day where we are doing a different show today. 3 hours of remembering the fallen and talking about the history around it. And we're beginning this first hour is going to kind of be World War II centric. And the second hour is going to be Korea-centric. And then the third hour is going to be Vietnam-centric. And then we're going to check out of here and go enjoy the rest of our day with our families while remembering the fallen. Now, before we get to the European section of World War II that we're going to go through today, I'm going to talk a little bit about these prisoner ships in Bataan. The part of the Pacific part of the war, I know it's big. It's never gotten the same amount of attention the European part of the war has gotten. But more specifically, the prisoner of war situation in the Pacific never really got the attention it should get. It just, and there, the main reason behind it is this. Towards the end of the show, we're going to read the names of trainees who died while in military service, because I have always viewed them as being just as heroic as the guy who charges a machine gun nest in Vietnam. The prisoner of war portion doesn't get the love it gets. One, because it's not as sexy as charging the machine gun bunker. And two, because the stories are so sad. And so we tend to ignore those things. Not that all battle and battlefield death isn't sad. It's all sad. It's all terrible. It's a life, a wonderful life that's now gone. But the prisoner of war stories, you have these brave warriors, and they're these young, strong, fit guys. They train, and they're patriotic, and they say goodbye to their families. Mom, dad, kiss your wife goodbye, and they go to fight for America. And yes, you know that they might die, and there's a chance, you know, the bombs or bullets will get them, but still you're going to picture this young, strong guy in your mind charging the hill. Look at Captain America go. But these Pacific War POW stories end with guys who are basically stick figures because they've been starved to death, dying of disease. One really, really terrible story that I will skip most of the details on. I don't want to make it too graphic. I'm trying to figure out how appropriate it is to make it real, but at the same time, not getting too graphic about it. A guy was visiting his friend in, it was a Japanese POW camp, and his friend was in the hospital, if you even want to call it hospitals. The Japanese did not allow Americans to have very many medications or anything. The doctors, the guys who would treat our guys, sometimes they would just treat them with nothing and hope the placebo effect worked. Sometimes they were digging through trees and roots and leaves like it's tribal days. It was that's what our guys had to resort to. Oftentimes they had to perform surgeries on our guys, including amputations, without any anesthesia because there was no anesthesia. So this was the life in these hospitals. Anyway, so this guy's visiting his friend in the hospital, and his friend has a bag that he's kept with him. It's, if I remember right, a picture of his wife and kids. I think his Bible was in there. Just a couple little personal effects. And he told his buddy, "Hey, man, I think I'm checking out of here tonight. I think I'm going to die tonight. So just make sure you take that for me, please, and get that back to my family." And the guy who was watching over his friend then had to roll his friend over and clean him up, because he had severe stomach issues and disease problems going on. He had to clean his friend. And as he was cleaning his friend passed away right then and there. We don't like telling those stories. You're probably cringing. Maybe you're crying. It's all appropriate. We don't pay enough attention to the POW portion of it because that's how they died. They died in terrible ways. ways that you wouldn't want your parents to find out about. You would tell your buddies, "Hey, please lie. Don't tell my mom I died like this. She doesn't need that in her mind." So these guys who survived Bataan, remember, we had this huge military presence in the Philippines, and they were good troops. They were good guys, but it was considered to be really the ultimate and cushy assignments, especially if you're a young man. Not that it's not hot and doesn't rain in the Philippines, but it was considered kind of a vacation spot. You can go look at old home videos of our troops in the Philippines, and they're riding bicycles and playing volleyball and drinking beer and chasing Philippine dimes around, and life's good. And then all of a sudden, boom, a war breaks out, and you find yourself essentially behind enemy lines. They ended up crowded in Bataan. It's the peninsula. Bataan's a peninsula. So they're crowded on the peninsula. Japanese have them cut off on the peninsula. They then are bombing them. The Japanese are... Now, remember, it's not just that these guys are in this horrific conflict. These guys, I don't want to call them peacetime troops. That's not what I mean. But they weren't in this mentality that you're about to be fighting medieval barbarians. Soon they find themselves capturing monkeys and snakes because they're starving to death, trying to eat them in the jungle, with the Japanese infiltrating their lines, stabbing them at night. They end up starved, racked with disease, clothes falling off their bodies. Then they surrender to the Japanese. But this is at the very beginning of the war. And we did know some stuff about how the Japanese were treating POWs, and we certainly knew some stuff about how they were treating the Chinese, but we had no idea they were getting ready to march our guys miles and miles and miles in the heat and then torture them. And then at the end of that, they would die oftentimes in the prison camps, die of disease. It was just respect for the Pacific War POWs. All right, let's go to the European portion of this really quickly. Got a couple citations to go over, more names to honor on a Memorial Day version of the Jesse Kelly Show. It is the Jesse Kelly Show, a Memorial Day version of the Jesse Kelly Show. Let's go to the little story. Well, it took place in Wingen. I'm probably saying that wrong. Wingen, France. This is the story kind of centered around Gerald Soper, but it's, let me explain. Okay, so it's 1945, getting late in the war, 1945 Germany, and we are busy trying to root the Germans out. The Germans, they are busy trying to infiltrate us to keep us on our heels. That's what the Battle of the Bulge was all about, remember? Try to break through America's lines, which would screw us all up and push us back. That brings us to this little place called Wingen, France. This is a town we hold. We, 1945, hold this town. It's our town. The Germans want it back. It's got a railway right above it. It's got a ridge line right above it. The Germans want it back. The Germans attack. And I need to clarify who was here. The American troops who were here were very green. There's a mistake that we all make. I know I make this mistake. Whenever we look at American troops in a war, especially an older war, one we weren't in, like World War II, we think about them being experienced troops, especially later in the war. They're all experienced troops. They're all World War II veterans. That's not how it works. There's a constant rotation, especially with America's troops, who we would have our guys finish their time and they would rotate out, and our guys would get killed or get wounded and they would rotate out. And so you were always having, if you were an experienced guy in a unit, you were always having a brand new batch of totally green guys who just don't know what they're doing. And you have to on the job train them before they get you and everyone else killed. And they do get everyone else killed. We'll do Vietnam in the last hour, but I was thinking about this story I was reading the other day about this guy in Vietnam. Shows up to his unit completely green. He didn't know the who's who, the what's what. And they're out on patrol, and he sees something, I believe it was a soda can on the ground out in the jungle, which the veterans would know, you stay away from something like that. That kind of shiny object is the kind of thing they would booby trap. He walks right up to it and kicks it like it's a football. They were picking pieces of him and his friends out of the treetops. It was a booby-trapped artillery round they had again. That's just what happens with the new guys. They're just new. They don't know. Anyway, so we have this town in Wingen, France, and our guys who were there who had the town, they're very green. The Germans had some units that were extremely highly trained units. They had some mountain units, alpine units, alpine SS units. These were mountain units that were trained better than other units were trained. I don't know if you want to call them special forces, but they were definitely the toughest of the tough units. Some of the best troops in Europe were the German SS, the Alpine SS units. Well, these Alpine SS guys do what Alpine SS guys do. They slip in between our lines and take the town from us. We essentially had to retreat from the town because they took over the town. But now the Germans have not only this town, they have the ridge line above the town. But wait, it actually gets worse. It's really, really, really a big deal for strategic purposes that we have this town. We can't allow the Germans to have it, because if they have it, they'll split our forces. We must take it back. Now, we have a couple things in our favor. Yes, these are super stud Germans who took the town, but God was watching out for us. Their radios stopped working. They didn't have any functional radios after they took the town. Therefore, you can't call in artillery. In fact, they didn't find out. Their commanders didn't find out till days later they actually took the town, because they couldn't radio back and say, we took the town. So you have these super stud Germans there, but they are cut off. Now you have to take them back. In taking them back, it's a slog. It's a slog for a variety of reasons. One, like I said, our guys were green. Two, it was freezing. And I mean, frigid cold. The Germans were freezing to death. We were freezing to death. And the bad luck of combat happens this way sometimes. During one of our assaults to try to take the town back, we drove up to them with a Sherman tank, trying to drive up the road in a Sherman tank. The road was so iced over, the Sherman tank just simply slid off the side of the road and off a bridge, just gone. It's just, all of it's not glorious in bombs and bullets. It's terrible things happen. That brings us to this, Mr. Gerald E. Soper, because this is days and days and days. We're attacking this town and attacking this town and attacking this town. And guys like Soper, what they have to do is house-to-house fighting. And as I've explained to you before on the show, I am the furthest thing away from an expert on urban warfare, urban combat. But we did quite a bit of training on that when I was in the Marines. So I know a little bit about a little bit, all right? I know enough to know it's horrible. And it's horrible with training. It's horrible when you're trained. It's horrible when you have the necessary equipment. Necessary equipment like, oh, I don't know, flashbang grenades and things like that where you can throw in. These guys don't have house-to-house combat training. They can't do anything but kick in doors and start shooting and chucking grenades. And so Soper, well, here's his Distinguished Service Cross citation. The President of the United States of America, authorized by Act of Congress, July 9th, 1918, takes pride in presenting the Distinguished Service Cross posthumously to Private First Class Gerald E. Soper, United States Army, for extraordinary heroism in connection with military operations against an armed enemy while serving with Company F, 274th Infantry Regiment, 70th Infantry Division, in action against enemy forces on the 7th of January, 1945 at Wingen, France. During a daylight attack on the town, intense sniper fire and automatic weapons activity halted the advance of Private First Class Soper's platoon. Disregarding the danger, he voluntarily crawled through a basement window from which the enemy was firing and hurled a grenade inside. Moving away from the window, he was wounded. He then crawled back and tossed another grenade through the opening. He was firing his rifle into the basement when hit the second time and died shortly afterwards. Private First Class Soper's gallant actions and ability enabled his platoon to resume the attack and aid in the capture of the town. His personal bravery and zealous devotion to duty at the cost of his life exemplify the highest traditions of military forces of the United States and reflect great credit upon himself, the 70th Infantry Division, and the United States Army. And you should know that while Soper was there chucking grenades in this basement window, it skipped over these details in the citation, but the Germans just stuck a rifle out the window and pressed it against his chest and shot him twice in the chest from point-blank range. His friends were so enraged because they watched it happen, they ended up taking the house. His friends ran up, chucking grenades in, angry, obviously, at the death of their friend. But this is a private first class. This is a young army guy. A young army guy laying there in Europe. He actually, one of his arms didn't say so in the citation. One of his arms was wounded. So like Rambo, he pulled the pin of the grenade with his freaking teeth. And let me tell you, having pulled the pin on a couple grenades, it ain't easy pulling a pin on a grenade with your teeth without ripping your teeth out. But this guy did it, and he gave his life for his country. And that's the kind of thing we want to honor today. That is impressive. In case you're wondering, it took days and days and days and days and days. We did finally take back Wingen, France. We took some losses. The Germans took even heavier losses. It was a brutal battle. We'll finish up with our World War II hour next.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Memorial Day, where we will spend 3 hours and hopefully all day honoring the fallen. I do hope you are enjoying this day. Remember, that's totally okay to enjoy a day off. Ain't nothing wrong with that. Just take a minute and remember. And again, these are more names you have emailed in. These are all World War II names this hour. Major General Maurice Rose, Private First Class Edgar Romeo Roy, Private Robert R. Gruwell, Gilbert Bruckner, Second Lieutenant Renfrew A. Yerksa, Carlisle Mendez, PFC Thomas Schoening, Roy Beaver. We'll get to some Korea War stuff next hour. Let's get to a couple more of these Distinguished Service Crosses. And I warned you that there are a lot of these, quote, lesser citations, these lesser awards, because they're considered lesser or lower than the Medal of Honor. You read some of these things and you read about the stories behind some of these things and you wonder, how the heck did this guy not win a Medal of Honor? This one's for Paul Edwin Alexander. The President of the United States of America, authorized by Act of Congress July 9th, 1918, takes pride in presenting the Distinguished Service Cross posthumously to Staff Sergeant Paul Edwin Alexander, United States Army, for extraordinary heroism in connection with military operations against an armed enemy while serving with Company G, 60th Infantry Regiment, 9th Infantry Division, in action against enemy forces on the 14th of June, 1944, near Normandy, France. When his company had been held up for over an hour by extremely heavy machine gun fire from an enemy strong point, Staff Sergeant Alexander led his squad forward to attack the enemy position. As he moved ahead of his men across the fire-swept terrain, Staff Sergeant Alexander was seriously wounded, but nevertheless continued to lead his squad and direct their attack. He personally threw hand grenades into 4 enemy machine gun positions, completely silencing the guns and inflicting numerous casualties on the enemy. Staff Sergeant Alexander's intrepid actions, personal bravery, and zealous devotion to duty at the cost of his life exemplify the highest traditions of the military forces of the United States and reflect great credit upon himself, the 9th Infantry Division, and the United States Army. Killed in action, 23 years old. This one's for Thomas A. Green, U.S. Army. The President of the United States of America, authorized by Act of Congress July 9, 1918, takes pride in presenting the Distinguished Service Cross posthumously to Staff Sergeant Thomas A. Green, United States Army, for extraordinary heroism in connection with military operations against an armed enemy while serving as a medical aid man with the 15th Armored Infantry Battalion, 5th Armored Division, in action against enemy forces on the 18th of September 1944 in Germany. A squad of armored infantrymen accompanied by a tank was assigned the mission of pushing through enemy positions to regain contact with the battalion command post, Staff Sergeant Green, though the wounded the previous day, voluntarily accompanied his comrades on the dangerous assignment. Near the enemy lines, the tank received a direct hit. While its crew members were attempting to dismount, two men were seriously wounded. Disregarding heavy artillery, mortar, and small arms fire placed by the enemy upon the disabled tank, Staff Sergeant Green advanced unhesitatingly to aid the wounded men. He ignored the pleas of his comrades to return to the rear when the squad was ordered to withdraw and chose to remain with the men. When intense enemy mortar fire began to fall in the area, Staff Sergeant Green, with calm efficiency and at the risk of his own life, continued to render medical treatment. He was last seen attempting to drag his wounded comrades to the safety of a nearby ditch. By his display of fearless courage, tenacity of purpose, and unflinching devotion to duty, Staff Sergeant Green exemplified the highest traditions of military forces of the United States and reflected great credit upon himself, the 5th Armored Division, and the United States Army. And you should know, this is one of those things, trying to put this the right way. I'm trying to do all this the right way, and I'm sure I won't, but he's listed as killed in action and MIA. And you heard it said he was last seen. Artillery, mortars, these super, super powerful, high explosive rounds that are fired. Oftentimes, the reason somebody is listed as MIA, missing in action, it's not because they were captured and died in a POW camp. That actually is the lower percentage of MIAs. Most of the time, people are listed MIA because they got blown up and there's nothing left. And I'm sorry to put it to you that way. I don't know a better way to put it. That sounds like that's I wasn't there. That sounds like the kind of situation we're dealing with here, where look, there are stories all over World War I, World War II, where if you're in, there'll be a group of dudes. Forget about a dude. There'll be a group. There's 20 dudes. There's 30 dudes. There's a platoon. They're sitting around having chow, and an artillery round comes in, and none of them get buried. None of them get listed as KIA, or if they do, they're listed later on. They're considered MIA. Why? Because even the freaking dog tags are gone. You're walking around, I mean, you find somebody's foot. What are you supposed to do with that? I know that's heavy, but that's the reality of it. Lots of times when you hear MIA, it's because he got blown up and there was nothing left. One more. Owens L. Kirk, U.S. Army. The President of the United States of America, authorized by Congress July 9, 1918, takes pride in presenting the Distinguished Service Cross posthumously to Private First Class Owens L. Kirk, United States Army, for extraordinary heroism in connection with military operations against an armed enemy while serving as a medical aid man with the 120th Infantry Regiment, 30th Infantry Division, in action against enemy forces on the 7th of October, 1944 in Germany. Although realizing that one aid man had been killed in attempting to reach the side of a wounded man, Private First Class Kirk heroically undertook the task himself. Despite the warnings of his comrades, he moved across the open, fire-swept ground to the fallen soldier. As he knelt in full view of the enemy, he was fatally wounded, but continued to administer aid to the soldier until darkness and subsequent evacuation. In sacrificing his life to save that of another, Private First Class Kirk typified the highest traditions of the military forces of the United States and reflected great credit upon himself, the 30th Infantry Division, and the United States Army. And that is World War II for this hour. Next hour will be Korea. Hang on.